It is 1:30 p.m. March the 8th, 1990. This is Jim Backus. And I'm at Sleepy Hollow, which is just north of Horace, North Dakota, visiting with David Martin, who is the artistic director of the Fargo-Moorhead Civic Opera. Mr. Martin, as you know, this is an audio history series that Moorhead State has compiled. They have about 150 or more, not by now, I suppose, of people who have made some significant impact on the community, who are known for their work, artistic or otherwise. And that's why I'm here this afternoon in a house that you yourself has built.
Good having you here.
Thank you. How long have you been with the company?
Well, I came to Fargo-Moorhead in 69, where I taught at Concordia College for 4 years, and then was fired from there, but by that time I had already started conducting a couple shows with the opera company. I had sung with them in 1970, just a small role. I was a professional singer then, and started conducting in 72 and became artistic director in 1973, and I've been here ever since. For many years I actually ran the company as general manager, as long as being artistic director, but the past few years I've relinquished some duties, not able to do everything, including sweeping the stage floor, so it's practically all artistic now.
You know, I, just as an observer, as an occasional customer, my impression has been that the that the company, it's been almost a miracle that it has survived through the years and has continued to do, to bring in important people to sing and to attract crowds, even though at times it seemed like it was almost at the hands of one or two generous people.
Yeah, that's true, and it's that way at this very moment. You know, we wonder from year to year how we're going to survive. It's almost impossible for an opera company to survive in a town this small. Opera costs 3 times more than any other art form. You not only have a symphony orchestra or a dance group, you have to have the scenery and the costumes, and that's about 60% of your cost. You have to constantly design and build hall rentals, everything involved with the company, and it just takes so much money to produce a couple performances of an opera. Many people think it's hardly worth it, and yeah, we have survived. You're right, it is a miracle. Hopefully that miracle will continue on, but I think there is actually some doubt whether this town will support the arts rather than becoming, as I call it, a jock town. And I think we've developed that reputation, and although I myself am a great sports fan, I was All-State basketball, I played semi-pro softball, I grew up playing soccer in grade school, playing against college teams. My whole history has been one of sports. Matter of fact, I gave up music for many years to go into sports for a while and then got back into it. So I love sports, but I think there needs to be a balance, and I have a feeling this town may not want that balance, and that's going to be for the future to see.
Well, I can speak for the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater, which struggled for probably 20 years, just living from hand to mouth, using vacant churches and gymnasiums in schools to present their offerings, and it took a quarter century, and I probably the same thing can be said by Mr. and Mrs. Gasper, who started out just kind of sub-renting and have developed in what they say is a very short time compared with other studios in other parts of the country. So the generosity of just a few people who see this as important, rounding out the artistic integrity of the community, is important. And I hope that the miracle continues.
Well, it's frustrating for the artists, because if we were living in Europe, of course, the general populace supports the arts as much as they support sports. the general worker will go right from work to see an opera, or a ballet, or a play, once a week maybe. You know, it costs him a couple of dollars to go up in the balcony, but he'll do that. That's part of his upbringing, whether he's an intellectual or not. We don't really train our citizens to do that. And it's part of perhaps some of our own fault of not starting early enough, although we're doing more and more outreach for schools, service clubs. It's still very, very difficult to stimulate interest. You know, I have a feeling that they say you can't live on hamburger every night, but an awful lot of people try. There's an awful lot of, you could, I was just reading the other day, do you know how many types of rice there are in the world? I asked somebody that, and they said, oh, what, 40 or 50? Well, you could eat rice for every meal the rest of your life and never eat the same variety twice. There are over 44,000 varieties of rice. Now, if you want to live a full life, then why not explore as many of that 44,000 as you can? I feel that way about everything in life. Food, adventure, seeing the world, music, sports, car racing, travel, climbing mountains, skiing, or downhill ski. Here I'm near the mid-century mark. I just bought my first motorcycle, and I ride the mountains in North Carolina. So I think people are losing out when they don't investigate all the ramifications of life. Most people live in a very, very limited form of it, either because of being afraid of they might be interested, or just not taking a chance, just being satisfied to be dull. And I think an awful lot of Americans live that life.
Your position is something that I certainly subscribe to. Let's go back. Are you a Midwesterner?
No, I'm from New York State, Rochester, New York.
From Rochester, New York. And as a youth, I gather that you were interested in sports and and a number of things.
When I was in the grade school, because of the school I was in, a rather tough school, a lot of Italian kids, blue-collar worker, we had a lot of kids who would go to reform school and then come back to grade school. So we had an eighth grade soccer team that played colleges and beat them. I probably weighed 180 then in eighth grade, and I had two fullbacks who I'm sure were 230 or 240. We could match up physically with many of the college teams. So, yeah, that was my life. My life was playing softball 10 hours a day in the summer, playing soccer, playing football. I started as a musician. I had to practice an hour or 2 hours every day on the piano. I started the Eastman School of Music, which is one of the most renowned music schools in the world.
Certainly.
I suppose when I was 5 and a half or so, piano and theory. So I had to practice before I could go out and do the sports, but I did both.
Your parents were musical?
My mother was a violinist. The rest of my family didn't. My mother was a symphony violinist at one point of her career. Composer. Both still living. My dad is going on 98, and my mother is going on 81.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother and a sister. My sister did a little music, but I'm basically the one that went on. And don't ask why, I haven't the vaguest idea. I often wonder myself why I'm not doing something else, trying to make a living. I've never made a living in my life.
You went to college and to
I went to Eastman School of Music, actually, to get my bachelor's and master's after moving around the world, and lived in Germany for 4 years and sang over there, and came back to the States and did a little bit of singing, and then got involved in teaching and conducting.
So you became a vocalist, and
right.
This took you to Europe.
Took me to Europe.
Where you studied?
I studied with one of the most famous singers in the world, still living, Hans Hotter, the great Wagnerian bass baritone. For a couple of years I was his only student. He heard me sing in the Aspen, Colorado Music Festival and invited me to come and work with him. So I jumped at the chance to work with really one of the truly great singers who's ever lived.
Wow.
And sang over there professionally, struggled, but made a small living, and eventually got tired of it. My wife got a little tired of living in Europe and missed America. So we finally came back. And it's very difficult to establish a career in any type of classical music. You say you live to hand to mouth, and I expect I will the rest of my life. I'm happy. I don't need a great deal, but it would be nice to earn a living just to survive. And that's very difficult in the arts.
How did you happen to take this directorship for Fargo Moorhead?
Interesting story.
It emerged from Concordia?
Yeah, I was hired by Concordia and then fired by Concordia. I'm rather of an individualistic teacher and didn't quite fit the choral mode. I believe, as you can already hear, very much in the individual. I'm not a group person. Another famous Fargo, and Kurt Knudsen, was involved in the opera company.
Oh.
And there was a little bit of a power play.
I know him very well.
Whether Kurt would take over the opera company and make it more of a theater-orientated music, or whether I would take it over and make it more operatic. And I would say we were friendly adversaries, and I had one group backing me, and he had another group backing him, and I guess I won. I'm still here, and Kurt's out making money in New York, so I don't know who won.
His father used to come over to the farm and kind of keep me apprised of Kurt's progress and tell me, where he might make an appearance.
Well, we've done shows together. I love working with Kurt as an actor.
I thought that his career might escalate. You know, I thought it might be more than it is today. I haven't. He did a soap, as I recall,
right.
And then I lost track of him.
Well, he's done a couple. He's done a lot of shows around the country. I've heard he was in Dallas or the Texas Theater.
With Regional Theater.
Regional Theater. Well, but. You know, there are people who are making $100,000 a night singing and are on the road 52 weeks a year, have no home life. And I saw one on TV the other night and I started thinking, is that the way to live? If you're making $100,000 a night, what can you possibly spend it on if you're constantly traveling except buying more food to eat and a couple fur coats and fancy jewelry to wear in your fingers? There's nothing wrong, and maybe there's something even very nice to be in a regional theater, to be set for 3 months or 6 months in one place and do something artistic rather than to sell your soul and be something that the publicity hounds can get a hold of. And I think that's part of our nature in America and indeed all over the world. Famous people are not famous necessarily because they're great. They're famous because some publicity agent tells the rest of the public they're great.
That's right.
There are many, many famous personages that don't have half the talent of people who live in everyday surroundings, even in Fargo Moorhead, who don't prefer to live that lifestyle, who will do as much as they can within their own realm, whether they be performers or craftsmen. They don't need this lifestyle. I never really needed it. I have an ex-wife who needed it, so she walked out and became famous. She needed that success. She needed that constant adoration.
Would I know the name?
Yeah, Elizabeth Holloway.
Elizabeth?
Holloway. She's singing in City Opera now. Sings in San Francisco Opera.
She's been here.
Yeah, she's...
Oh, yes.
She sang with the company for many years. She started with me as a... She wasn't a singer. She was a art teacher.
Was she in The Girl of the Golden West?
No.
I've seen her. I've
but
heard
she's, her. She sings all over the world now. Some people need to become famous. And they'll do anything to become famous.
Yes.
That's just part of life too, but I guess we have to accept it. For other people, I've worked with singers who will never be famous, and yet I admire their talent and their artistry maybe even more than I would famous people who make records all the time. So that's no criteria.
Was the theater, was the opera in being while you were in Concordia, and were you asked to join it?
Well, when I first came, they asked me to sing a small role in Carmen.
Ah.
And when this sort of struggle took over, the company again had folded, they canceled their production, had no more money, and it looked like it was going to die, and that's when it was sort of offered to me and to Kurt and to each to present a proposal, and so I sort of revived it. seems to be one of my facets around here, to revive something that's already dead. Same thing happened to the Youth Symphony. Youth Symphony had gone down to about 15 or 20 students, and they came to me and asked me if I would take it over, and I rebuilt it back up to about 75 or 80 students over a period of 8 years, and then finally let somebody else take it over.
I remember the Youth Symphony.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. That's another very frustrating part, because I was dealing with students who had a lot of talent, and I treated them as musicians, not as students. But I still had to fight off that they had swimming lessons and tennis lessons and basketball games, and the music was always the last man on the totem pole for rehearsal. And that can be very frustrating, but in many ways it was a wonderful period too to work with all these young students.
Were you impressed that there was great potential there in some of them?
Well, yeah, I have many, many professional players in my opera orchestra today that started with me as Youth Symphony people. So that's nice. I mean, I had one girl who was from Moorhead, Jeannie Benson, who started out in, I think, 8th grade with me, played for my opera all through college when she went to Concordia, and even after that, when she graduated from Concordia, went to Colorado and came back and played a few shows. So I had this one person for 8-9 years that developed them from just a little young girl to a professional musician. That's nice to see.
The Gaspers have said they have, in the field, they see it as many, many potential dancers, and they're impressed by what you might call the raw material in the community. Was by any chance the successful P.T. Bach, was the next Fargo? Was he ever in the Junior Symphony?
I don't know. I wasn't here when he grew up here. I don't know if he's older than me, but he had already gone on to greener pastures.
Late 40s and early 50s, yes. His name escapes me just for the moment. You have had a hand, one way or another, in the music, in the musical community here for some time. And you say you were assigned to save the opera.
I sort of lied. They asked me if I could conduct, or if I had conducted before an orchestra. I said, well, I guess so, yeah. And I was an opera singer. So I'm basically a self-taught conductor. I had to learn very quickly how to stand up in front of an orchestra and how to read a score. And you're involved in the business of music, so a lot of the tools I had already with me, but that's not the same as training as a conductor, although many people say conductors are born, they are taught. And I think there's a certain truth to that. You have to have a flair and a feeling for what you're doing, a phrase, and if you do that as a singer, they say Toscanini was great because he could make a lion sing. He would always yell cantare to sing to the orchestra. That's very true, and I think in many ways a former singer can make a fine conductor because he learns, he teaches people how to sing a phrase, not just to make a lot of noise. When I first started, actually, on my second or third year here in town, we were doing not only the opera shows, though, we were doing shows at the Moorhead State. My first producer was the director of the opera at Moorhead State, the opera workshop, Michael Robbins. So Michael and I started producing 4 or 5 complete operas a year at Moorhead State, and then we would do a couple with the Fargo-Moorhead Civic Opera, and then we'd go over to the community theater and do a show or two. So we were involved in 9 or 10 shows a year, back to back, which to push the limit of everybody, but we were really involved, and we would take our students from Concordia and from Moorhead State and involve both in both college productions and then also into the opera and the community theater. So we had a complete circle, and once Mike left and I got out of the college, we lost that to some extent. We lost getting the college student involved. That's come back now in the last few years. I'm using more and more young college singers, and hopefully next year we're going to have a tri-college production within the opera, which we take the best of each school and use the college orchestra, a combined group, and do a complete full professional production using the talented college students. That's our idea anyways, which I think this community needs desperately.
Yes,
and that's the kind of training that people should be having around here. But so far, they haven't gotten it, for one reason or another.
Yes. Have you thought of a vehicle for the Tri-College?
Yes, I have. Doing a La Pericole of Offenbach, it's a comedy. Has lots of roles, a wonderful, fun show set in Lima, Peru.
I think I read about it.
Done at the Metropolitan Opera quite a few years ago. The famous actor Cyril Richard did a new production. So it's a type of vehicle that can accommodate young voices without doing any damage, but provide them an opportunity, and also is a very good show for the general public to see. A fun show, an enjoyable evening.
Cyril Richard made an album a long time ago with some comedy songs. You probably got it somewhere.
No, actually I don't. Everything I have here is classical. I have a Dixieland jazz buff and piano rags, but I stick pretty closely to classical music.
What do you think about the future of Fargo Moorhead? You were dubious a few moments ago.
I'm still dubious. When I first came, I love Fargo, by the way. I still go back to New York occasionally, and I normally drive, and the reason I do that is I go to New York to go grocery shopping, and I buy every ethnic food I can find, and espresso coffee, and I load up my car a week later after seeing a couple operas and plays and buying some old books and records, and I drive back home for 24 hours smelling every ingredient from all over the world. But I have to get out of there. I can't stand the filth, the crime. But when I first came to Fargo, I felt that this was a place that was a little bit backward, but that was going to grow. And I'm a little disappointed that it has not grown as much as I thought it should have. I don't know why. I think we've lost a lot of the artistic types that may be a little bit goofy, crazy, off the wall, but there are the very eccentrics that add a little bit to a community, that bring something special. I remember the community theater in the time of Pete Idy and Tom Johnston when we'd do Waiting for Godot, and when we did The Hostage, Brendan Behan, which I was involved in. We were doing avant-garde shows every now and then. Yeah, maybe the theater was half empty, maybe people walked out. But people were making statements in this town, and I think everybody has sort of fallen asleep. And I think it's very unfortunate, because as far as people in the town, I can't think of a place that has nicer, ordinary people. I just love the people. I love to go into shops, talk with people. I have so many friends here. And yet even those friends, probably most of them don't come and see what I do as an artist. They'll go to another hockey game, and eventually I genuinely believe that this town will have a hockey ring on every corner before they'll build a performing arts center. You will now build a covered dome to play maybe 2 football games a year, if it happens to be snowing outside. Of course, I'm against dome stadiums. I'd hate to go. I've never gone to the Metrodome because I can't stand baseball inside. Was meant to be played outside, so was football. I love to go to a football game with the snowflakes blowing in my face and being cold, but that's part of the ritual, isn't it? But we'll build that, and before we'll develop what I think this community needs. And the dome is not going to bring the community together, I'm sorry, and I'm a good friend of Vince Lindstrom, but I disagree with, again, we're getting promotion for empty promises for the future of this town, and it has not grown, and I don't know what's going to make it grow. There are some of us who would like to see it, because I do like living here. I like Montana even better because it has mountains, but it's a wonderful place to be. I love to watch the sunset and be able to look out for 100 miles and not see tall buildings. That's beautiful. But this community has got to wake up, and I'm not sure. Maybe it's our leaders. I don't know. Maybe we need leaders that are going to wake up this town. We certainly need a newspaper. We certainly need TV stations that will wake up the town and not let the status quo be as it is. And I think that has happened.
you've made an interesting statement. The, you know, I've heard it referred to as the Nordic syndrome, a certain stolidity, you know, a certain cold, winterish kind of personality. And I met a lot of people through the forum for many years, and I'm inclined to agree.
Well, I know people. I know Bill Marcille. He used to be on our opera board. So I'm not talking against people, as much as I'm saying that they are willing to change, but I don't know why. Maybe it is this Arctic syndrome. It is falling asleep, going into hibernation. Although, when it's winter up here, I mean, most of us do not have cabin fever. I do go out and cross-country ski when it's cold. I may not stay out all day, but I still go outside. People exist in this weather, and we actually like this weather. I prefer this. I hate heat. I love being cold weather. There's something very invigorating about it. People do get out on a cold night and go to events, whether it be performing events, arts events, or sports. We do go out. So that's not it. But there is a mentality. And I think a community does need leaders to stimulate them. And I don't think we have those leaders. We have con men. And I'm using that in a nice sense.
Politicians.
Well, yeah, politicians are all con men. We have Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce is a con man. Not a bad one, but he's still a con man. Coaches are con men. Whatever we'll do to satisfy the public, we'll do. That's part of the problem with the opera company. Opera is not a popular art form. Now, we could go in and do Gilbert and Sullivan or our musicals, like Fiddler or The Music Man, and make a lot of money. But that is not our purpose in life, just to make money. Our purpose is to bring something a little bit better to the community. And hopefully there will be a few wise people that will take that chance and say, hey, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to eat Chinese cabbage tonight instead of lettuce. Someday, one by one, we're going to have that happen for the community to become alive again. And I hope it's not too late. I hope it happens before all of us leave here, because we were forced to leave here. We don't want to. But if nothing is existing, if there's nothing for us to do here, we have to go somewhere else and try to stimulate that. And I'm sure there are other communities out there that are waiting for artistic people to come and say, hey, we've been waiting for you. We needed somebody like this to stir up. My ex-wife said I should go into politics, but I'd be the worst person in the world to go into politics, because I say it like it is, and you can't do that. Even though people want to hear that, that's a death warrant as far as being elected anything. So people like me have to work in the background, but there has to be leaders who have these same beliefs but can do it in a nice conning style, so people don't realize they're being force-fed or fed something new. And I'm not the person to do it, but there are people out there, hopefully, that will wake this town up.
The very first director for the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater was something of an eccentric in the eyes of many people.
Is George?
I wish I could remember his name. No matter. It seemed to me that he had a lofty concept about what the community theater would be and should be, and it possibly has fallen a little away from that original concept. And it's difficult to maintain that ethics that you've stated pretty well. You did not have children between Elizabeth and yourself.
No. I have four children, my first wife. Well, I'm very good speaking terms with my first wife, and my four children are the most special people in my life. So one thing nice about all this is I maintain very close contact. And all my children are musical, by the way.
I was going to ask, are they artists?
Yeah, my oldest daughter is first violinist in Missoula, Montana Symphony. My second daughter plays guitar and violin. My third daughter is a flutist, and my son's a fine classical and jazz pianist down in Minneapolis. So they're all involved in music. So that I like. And they do it at their own rate. They don't have to be professionals if they don't want to. I very much like my daughter, who's a violinist in the orchestra. She has her own family, but takes out time to not only teach violin, but to play in the symphony along with just being a housewife. And I think that's the most important thing for all musicians, is community. the people I dearly love in the Fargo-Moorhead Civic Opera are my chorus people, who are nurses and doctors and dentists and who work in warehouses and are just housewives or maybe school teachers. And they come out once a week to sing, and a lot of them take lessons. They're very serious about it. They know they aren't going to be famous singers, but they want to do the best they can. So they study, and some of them go from chorus to doing small roles to doing bigger roles. They're the people that I would miss if I ever left this town, because they're the backbone of this whole community, really. They're the people that have expanded their life beyond the ordinary realm of school and church and home and job, for so many women are working today. And I think still a lot of husbands don't quite understand that. I know they allow their wives to participate, but many of them do not go and see their wives participate. I find that very strange.
Well, David Martin, it's been a pleasure visiting with you about the Civic Opera Association. I wish you the best in the months and years ahead. You have been responsible for the apparent salvation of the association for the past couple of years, and the community owes you thanks for that. I appreciate the visit. Thank you very much, sir.